Good day, nerds, and welcome to episode 110 of the Nerd Cantina Show. I'm your host, Ken, joined by my co-host, Steve, and we're going to recap some nerd news. We're going to begin an entertainment talk with the news that Regal Cineworld are looking to close all theaters in the US and UK. We've got a casting for Ms. Marvel for the Disney Plus series, and then we can jump into the tech news and discuss Facebook's thoughts on the Netflix documentary Social Dilemma. CEOs are getting called back to testify in front of Congress. Starlink news and a little bit of hacking talk. A lot to get to. Let's get started.
Calling back all nerds. Nerds!
All right, and welcome to episode 110 of the Nerd Cantina Show. We could just jump right into the latest news regarding the theaters. And, you know, this is coming on the heels of, last week we talked about all kinds of Disney 20th century movie delays that were expected, but made official last week. And then this week we get the official pushback of the upcoming Bond film. And that seems to be the final blow, the final straw, as it's being reported all over the major publications, that Regal and Cineworld have made public statements that they're closing down all theaters on October 8th, so Thursday of this week, and they're going to close it for the foreseeable future and continue to watch and see when the next potential opening will be.
Well, the article states that they're closing them down permanently. To me, this means that Regal is going to cease to exist because of this.
So that was one article. And then another one I read that had press releases from the individual whoever was doing the PR for Cineworld, simply stated that, you know, at this point in time, they're kind of like a grocery store without vegetables. Like, how long can you actually continue to exist without a product? But they said that they would be paying close attention towards the future of, you know, what films and things are going to come out and allow releases and release dates. So it didn't seem, by the actual public statements from Cineworld, that they are looking to close permanently. Now, there's speculation that they're not going to recover from this, but I don't think that that's official news yet.
Yeah, I mean, that analogy is basically perfect. You know, I don't understand what the movie executives see as like a benefit to this. Like, they want to maximize profits. Well, if you keep delaying to maximize profits and you put all the movie theaters out of business, what kind of fucking profits are going to be left for you when you finally decide to release this movie?
Yeah, I mean, as far as these theater companies are probably concerned, does it really matter at this point in time? If the existing movie theaters fold and then COVID ends, somebody else will buy those theaters, pennies on the dollar, and movies will get shown.
You think, you know, but in a global pandemic, I mean, unless a company like Amazon buys them out, you know, like there's not going to be a lot of companies with a billy laying around to just buy up 500 properties and equipment and, you know, to up and start a new movie theater chain. Like, I don't know.
I think in the end, these major companies, that I don't think AMC, Cineworld, you know, they're probably not going to fold up permanently, but they're just going to, I mean, they're in for a long, tough time. You know, really the next semblance of any major releases coming out.
Well, two months into COVID, April, the speculation was that they weren't going to make it. And now we're 6 months in and we're pushing movies out for another 6 months. Like, I just don't see, you know, I get that it costs a lot of money to make some of these movies and that they're probably at best going to break even on some of these movies. But I mean, just like every restaurant, just like every mom and pop shop, just like every other small business in this country right now, shouldn't they just have to run at a break-even point to survive this? Like, I just don't understand why this industry thinks they're special and can just hold out and let everything burn around them and come out in April unscathed and just like, okay, well, we got movies now. Give us your $1 billion because we want all the monies. Like, I just don't see why they don't have to write 2020 off as a loss like every other American in this country.
I mean, I guess they just have the power here, right? They hold all the cards in the sense of they can choose the release dates. They have options with going, premium video and on demand. So, no business that has the option to be more profitable later or through another medium or whatever else is forced into a position that they have to accept the losses.
Yeah, but really, what other business is that symbiotic with another industry? You know what I mean? Like we said, it'd be like tire manufacturers wanting to manufacture tires, but no one's building cars. Like there's other businesses, but there's very few that are that symbiotic with another industry. And for one side to completely ignore the other side and their necessity to each other to just, make as much money as they possibly can. I don't know. I find this very, very short-sighted and very kind of like cutthroat.
Yeah, I mean, I do. But at this point in time, I definitely don't fault, like, Regal can't be making money. Like, there's no way that these theater chains are in any way coming close to their break-even. You know, there's so much overhead in maintaining these massive properties and everything that they need to do to stay open. So it makes complete sense for them to close. I looked at, like, what is playing at the theater near me, and it's like, yep, Tenet is still playing a couple times a day. New Mutants is playing, and that's it. And it's literally a bunch of older
Empire,
movies.
It's a lot of people are playing Star Wars. Some are playing Back to the Future out by me.
Yeah, there's a bunch of like playing Pets and Life of Pets and Despicable Me, a bunch of family friendly things that you can just, I guess, take your kids to a theater to go see something you can watch for free online anyway right now, or through one of your many subscription services. Just a bunch of old movies. That's like, I don't know. I don't know who's going to go see this. In the end, they are put at a point where it's exactly that. They are a company with no product. Like, you got to close the storefront. If you have no product to sell, you got to close the storefront. And that in the end will probably have them lose less money than staying open. So we'll see. We'll see if anything comes back. But, as I said,
I got a Regal 2 miles from my house, like right behind my house, and they go out of business. I'm packing up outside and seeing if I can't snag some of them nice ass recliners as they wheel them out for the cheap, man. But that's why it's sad to me is like, I have the AMC A-list, so I constantly go to the AMC. But when I had MoviePass, I kind of split it. I used to go to Regal half the time, AMC the other half the time, depending on convenient of showtimes and things like that. I loved going to the Regal. Those chairs are, man, they're so comfortable. Like, every theater has a recliner. Every theater, I mean, it's a big ass, like, comfy ass recliner too. So I like the fact that there was another company putting out major competition so that, we can keep competitive prices for concessions and amenities and things like that. I just have a fear that when all this is said and done, there's only going to be one company that comes out victorious and can survive. And that's just going to limit options on people's movie experiences. It's going to raise costs because they're going to have to make up for all this shit. So when these movies that we've been all dying to see finally do come out, like they're going to tax the shit out of everybody to make up for all these losses. So again, not only are companies like Universal and Sony screwing the theaters, they're eventually going to screw us too.
Yeah, there's definitely no good solution here. Yeah, Tenet was the attempt to see if, but in the end, the consumers failed. I'm to blame partly here. I didn't go see Tenet.
Yeah, go see Tenet, dude. Dick, like the theaters are dying. Go see Tenet. It's a good fucking movie.
Yeah, I'm certain it is. And in the end, consumers were provided one shot to prove that the industry was still viable in a pandemic. And man, the consumers didn't come out and do it. So
didn't they though? Like they can only sell a certain amount of tickets. So I'm wondering like what percentage of capacity they hit for those like first couple weeks. Was it the fact that not a lot of people wanted to go out and see it? Or was it the fact that due to restrictions, not a lot of people were allowed in to see it? You know, because I buy one ticket, they block out nine seats around me. That's not a very profitable business model either.
Yeah, I mean, I think the industry was underwhelmed with the performance. So whatever estimates, best case estimates that they had, or like realistic estimates that they had, it didn't meet that. And that is what's caused, again, really, I mean, we're looking at March timeframe being the next semblance of really any kind of movies that are notable.
Well, we still have Wonder Woman and the Ryan Reynolds movie. There's still a few slated for December.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
Yeah, no shit.
I mean, I still think, yeah, you got Free Guy, Dune, and Wonder Woman, I guess, still for December, but I don't know.
Yeah, they were showing the Dune trailer during Tenet. Like, if they push Dune back, man, people going to be mad. Like, there's a big movie audience. I wonder, like, if this is a ploy to get more VOD kind of availability. Like, I don't know what the profits on VOD are for a lot of these companies. I don't know what, you know, benefits other than at-home viewing for consumers VOD is going to offer for people. I don't know, man. I'm not a VOD guy. Like, if I want to watch movies at home,
whatever the outcome is, there are going to be permanent changes to the theater model, to the theatrical release. I mean, everything is going to be different whenever the hell we as a society get the, you know, the rules allow us. And our, you know, comfort level allows us to return somewhat to normal. So it's I don't know, it's gonna be interesting, but I guess we can move on from that depressing topic. We can just talk about the fact that I guess we've in Marvel news have a new casting for the Ms. Marvel role. And it's gonna be it's Iman Vellani. She's pretty much a brand new actress coming out of Canada, a completely really unknown. And she'll be playing Ms. Marvel. Ms. Marvel being, you know, the only Muslim comic book hero to run her own story. Okay.
For those that don't follow comics that much, this is not the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel character. They did not recast Brie Larson. Ms. Marvel is a young teenager with kind of Mr. Fantastic powers. She's the main character in that Avengers video game that just released that I've been playing, which isn't bad. Like it's got its ups and downs. So they've really kind of like pushed her forward in the video game world. They've been featuring her in comics for a while now. There was like a small cameo in Captain Marvel, the daughter of Carol Danvers' best friend. Wears the same kind of like color scheme and outfit and everything. And I think they were kind of like looking to maybe pivot off that at some point. But no, this is good for inclusion. This is good for Disney to be branching out into other like unknown characters. They've always found success in bringing new characters light. And I think it's because, you know, we've seen so many renditions of Captain America, Superman, Batman, like these are the names we know. And I think when they can take a lesser known character like this and bring it to the screen in a quality way, like they did with Guardians, I think it works to their benefit. Honestly, I think we're looking for new content and using those, I guess you'd call them B team characters. I think that works in their benefit.
Yeah, we'll see with how they tie all this in. It's been said, you know, in previous releases, press releases, that Ms. Marvel will tie into movies, that she will be featured in various Marvel featured films. She's not going to be limited just to the Disney Plus series, that she will kind of branch out and be a part of the overall MCU. So, yeah, it's a, it'll be an interesting character. You know, we've got that just on the heels of She-Hulk getting cast. You know, still looking at moving forward with Shang-Chi and all these other movies. So everything's still moving forward as far as planning for Marvel. We'll see what those release dates look like.
As forward as things can get.
Yeah. Let's see when those things get released.
Yeah, it's really sad because, I mean, we're beginning October. We should be 3 to 5 episodes deep in our favorite shows coming back. You know, we're going to be in a content drought really soon. Like, really, really soon. Like, I was just thinking about that the other day. I was like, man, I haven't watched, you know, a lot of my favorite shows in a while. And right now is right kind of where you'd be seeing all the hype for Grey's coming back, This Is Us coming back, you know, the Maisels, the Handmaids. Like, and we don't hear nothing about it. They're like, these shows just fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah. Mandalorian season 2, though.
Boom.
October, was it like 29th, something like that, very end of October here.
Cantina, so, watch parties, man.
Yeah, down. At least we have that going.
Yeah, that'll save us for 6 weeks.
We hope it saves us too. Hopefully they keep that going well. But we can, you know, kind of, I guess, create a bridge here between entertainment and tech, in the sense that it's, I guess it's entertainment.
Tech reacting to entertainment.
Yeah. So you've got the Netflix documentary Social Dilemma. It's been in the Netflix top 10 for, I think, pretty much all of September. And then it's still kind of trending on Netflix. Pretty popular when you talk about like a documentary, hour and 40 minute roughly documentary. Gained some significant popularity over Netflix. And did you get a chance to watch it?
I haven't watched it yet. I've heard a lot of podcasts talking about it, and I've watched other documentaries that kind of tackle the same subjects. I'm hesitant to think that there's information in that documentary that I haven't heard yet, but I'll get to it. I will. Like, so I said, me and you are very versed in this subject, so I just don't know what news they're going to bring to us.
So, yeah, I was going to just tell you that, yeah, there's nothing in it that we don't already talk about, that we don't talk about regularly. It's not really bringing anything to the table. You know, maybe some new quotes from people, insiders, you know, ex-engineers and whatever else, but they're not saying anything that we haven't already known, already researched and looked into. And the truth is, I know it's a bit of a sensationalized documentary, as all Netflix documentaries tend to be to some degree, but this one a little more. Like, they've got, like, they're acting out somebody's addiction to social media and
is it like
a,
this is your brain on drugs kind of thing?
It goes from like moments of like actual documentary talking and doing interviews with people who are insiders and talking about, you know, algorithms and all that other stuff, and then it'll like transition to, like, you ever watched like Santa Clarita Diet on Netflix?
I've watched 2 episodes and I couldn't do it.
Well, there's one of the kids on that, or he's probably a grown man, but plays a teenager. Well, he's playing like a high schooler on this documentary who's like getting radicalized and ends up, you know, at protests and stuff like that through the algorithms. And it's like, they really sensationalized it and played it up to the point that it's like, you know, they didn't make it for nerds like us who just want the facts and are already pretty well versed in this. It is definitely like trying to get somebody who's never even considered this, probably somebody who was literally scrolling Facebook while watching the documentary, because they couldn't get the device out of their hand.
So yeah, it wasn't made for our listeners, because our listeners know, right, guys? Like, we bring this to you to you almost on a weekly basis. The notifications, the dopamine drips, the whole nine, the tracking, the
algorithms, the complete data collection.
Our listeners know.
And they talk about it. So for people who are gaining their first exposure to this, it probably was fairly eye-opening.
No, it's good information. Like you said, you know, we know our numbers. So the few hundred people that listen to us regularly, they know. But if this gets it out to the masses, you know, you gotta put some makeup on that pig and strut it out for everybody. And that's, I guess, what they did.
Yeah, I'm hoping, you know, based off the fact that it was number one for a little while, and then, it, like I said, it was in the top 10 on Netflix for pretty much a month, which means that it gained probably a couple million views. So yeah, maybe that's a couple million people that like for the first time thought about like, you know, what is Facebook and Instagram doing? Like, why is it, you know, all of these suggested YouTube videos and suggested, you know, it.
Well, you know, I go to a lot of homes a week with my job. I work with a lot of other contractors. You know, I see new people every week when I go to work, and I have some of these conversations with people, and it's actually quite shocking how little people know or how much in denial people are of what, you know, what is really going on at these tech companies. You know, it's a big mission of ours to inform the public on these things. You know, cause we're very concerned about it, but it is actually astonishing how many people I come into contact with that really don't know these things.
Yeah. And I think, so I've listened to, the guy who created this documentary, Tristan Daniels, I've listened to him on other podcasts and listened to him talk to others. And, you know, he's very concerned about these things, and it's of interest. And it's like when you come across somebody who doesn't know or doesn't believe in kind of like the algorithms and their ability to just manipulate the way we interact with the world, see the world, whatever else. He talks about like this fun experiment, which like I would love to do with some family members and friends that I know don't necessarily believe in these. You know, the shaping, the algorithmic, like driving us into our own little chambers of information. And he talks about like just swapping, doing like a device swap, like just open up your YouTube, have them open up their YouTube, and then just swap phones or computers and just look at how drastically different the suggested videos are from one person to the other. And like unless you're going to do some significant effort, you cannot get out of your algorithmically driven kind of narrative that
Rogan talks about that on his podcast, that that Ari Shaffir for like a week straight on Instagram, all he did was like dog photos and totally broke his own algorithm. And then every time he opened Instagram, all he was shown was photos of dogs. You know, like he purposely did that experiment on himself. He's like, for a week, all I'm going to do is like dog photos and I'm going to look up dog hashtags. And yeah, he retrained his own algorithm.
Yeah. And like I said, they sensationalized this documentary by like, whatever. They have people like acting out, like personifying the algorithm and saying like how they're making these decisions and how the algorithm's working. You know, again, they're trying to speak to lay people and not nerd people.
So I'm not as interested as in the algorithms, the tech side of it, because I mean, we should all know that kind of, you know, stuff. Like computers learn what we want and they're going to show us what we want. What interests me more is the psychological aspect of it. What happens to you in your brain when you get a notification? What happens in your brain when you see an article that triggers you, and why you go back to these apps? Why you keep, like, it is an addiction in the sense of your body chemistry feeds off of what these apps and these programs and the algorithms are feeding you. You know, yeah, when you look at it, is it necessarily a bad thing that your phone listens to you and occasionally shows you a product that it thinks you might want? And sometimes you want that product and it can be convenient. But at the same time, that's not all it's doing. You know, the algorithms aren't just there to, you know, optimize marketing. They're also there to optimize time viewed and things like that. And they realize that making you angry is what keeps you on your phone the longest. And that is not what is most beneficial to your health and to society, but they don't give a shit. So they constantly pump notifications to your phone that have nothing to do with anything. You know, like I'll look and I'll have the red dot on my app and it's like, oh, who replied to the cantina or who did this? And it's just like, nope, just wanted to get your attention. You may have a message in your messenger that you haven't checked. Okay, well, thanks, Dick. thanks. Like,
yeah, no, I mean, it is nefarious to some degree. And I don't know, there isn't really a solution. And even in the whole documentary, they don't really come up with a solution. Like, they just talk about, you got to regulate this. And I agree. It's not going to regulate itself. You know, the reward system is completely counterproductive to what is good for human beings. In this regard, when we talk about the social media use, we talk about the addictive nature that they like deliberately attempt to become so entwined into our lives, try to be in everybody's account. So it's a difficult state. Like I said, for any nerds who want to go watch it, like I said, it gives some good information. It's kind of hokey at times, but
well, for sure, I mean, to the start to finding a solution, I think, is informing the public, right? You know, step one has to be to inform the masses of what's going on before we can butt heads and figure out what we need to do about this. People at least need to know. You can't solve a problem that you're not aware of. So, you know, as much as this documentary wasn't beneficial to people like us, it is widely overall beneficial to the human race as a whole.
Yeah, but Facebook, Mark Zuckerberg have come out and rebutted this documentary, just saying that, like,
yeah, no shit.
One, giving a legitimate criticism that it really is sensationalizing the facts, and yes, it is. You know, this is what Netflix documentaries and documentaries as a whole do. They really try to tell one side of the story in a you know, digestible, sensationalized way.
Yeah.
You know, this is what they do. You know, but really talks about it. You know, they're only highlighting, you know, the negative effects that these things have, and not giving credit to Facebook, where, you know, they made decisions in 2018 that decreased usage, that they have admitted their faults in the 2016 election and the issues around that, and have made changes since, and just talk about it, like, they're not clearly painting the picture here for everybody. I'd say they pretty much did.
It's really kind of messed up that Facebook gets the brunt of all the attention on this subject. Like, they're the only ones doing this.
The only social media that matters.
Well, so I've listened to a few of these the guys that are blowing the whistle on this, and honestly, listening to them talk, the scariest company I'd have to say is Google. Like, there have been a few people that have said flat out, delete your fucking Gmails, stay off Google, because of the overreach that they have into reading your emails and scanning and the data they can mine from using a Google, and also the control of information. So when you want an answer to a question and you type it into Google, they're going to give you the answer they want to give you. They're not going to present all the answers to you and let you sift through it. They're going to give you the answers that they want you to see that benefit their company or whatever agenda that they're trying to push. So as Facebook is bad in social interactions, Google is controlling information, and we all know information is power.
Yeah, I mean, it's all. I think Google does tend to get a free pass here, whereas everybody talks about Facebook anytime this comes up. I just think, you know, when Facebook is the monopoly of social media, you know, Instagram is owned by Facebook, and those are hands down the two greatest influencers in the world of social media. They have a lot to answer for. Google also does, in the sense of not just, you know, Google, but also YouTube. And we know the power of video towards convincing people, like you talk about, like the radicalization or the swaying of people, the conspiracy theorists and all that stuff. It's like, yeah, they find their Facebook groups, but they're also touting and getting recommended a whole lot of videos. Yeah, down the rabbit hole. So it's there's definitely,
well, and YouTube is the second largest search engine. So you're the first largest is Google. You want an answer to something, you type it into Google. Number two is YouTube. You want an answer to something, you're typing into the YouTube search bar. So just in those two alone, they are literally controlling everything that you see. It's that is a problem that everyone's overlooking, because it's all about, I'm tired of fighting with my uncle on Facebook, and and nobody's really paying attention to the fact that every time you send an email, it gets scanned. Every time you get an email, it gets scanned. Every time you type in a question, it gets scanned, and they are just saying, well, this is good for business, this is bad for business. Here, this is good for the political, mindset that we have. We're going to push this. That, to me, that's way more concerning than getting triggered scrolling Facebook every day.
Yeah, well, what we'll get here soon is some recent news comes out that Facebook, Twitter, and Google CEOs have agreed to voluntarily testify once again, before the U.S. Senate committee. Last time, you know, it was about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months ago, that they virtually appeared before the Senate committees, but that was specifically for more like monopolistic behavior, antitrust stuff, talking about competition, where they were diving into, you know, Amazon basics, selling and stealing other people's products, and limiting the marketplaces, as well as, like, you know, Facebook and Instagram not allowing other social media companies to exist. So it's really about competition. This one coming up here at the end of October, on October 28th, is going to be on interviewing them on Section 230. And Section 230, again, it's the weird part of the Communications Decency Act, but that's what allows them to essentially have no liability for what people do on their platforms. This is what keeps tech companies held accountable for people planning a crime within their service, or what, you know, when somebody shares completely unfounded conspiracy theories or whatever else, that they don't have to be held to, like, libel standards like a newspaper or whatever else, and they don't have to be held criminally liable for the communication that people do on their individual platform. We talked recently about the Section 230 rules being kind of like under attack through the, man, I forgot the acronym now.
Not the Earn It.
Yeah, they Earn It. It was Earn It, where, you know, it was all for the children trying to find the channel pornography rings and trying to break Section 230, to where the companies had a legal obligation to report people who were discussing crimes, say in Facebook Messenger or through other means through their services, that they had a legal obligation to report that, which meant that they had a legal obligation to scan, read, and analyze everybody's messages. And then now they're going to go and hold a hearing to talk about Section 230. Probably have to defend why it's necessary. And I'll be tuning in to watch that on the 28th.
Yeah, I tuned into the last one. I was glad that it happened. But, I mean, is this all really a dog and pony show? Like, what came out of that last meeting? What legislation is getting written? What, you know what I mean? Like, it seems like this is all just a way for certain people on committees to puff their chest and tell their constituents that they care. Like, look, I gave Zuckerberg the business. Vote for me. I gave Zuck the business. And nothing is coming of it, though. We have no new privacy laws. You know, we have no, like, if anything, they're like you said, with the Earn It Act, they're going in the opposite direction than public safety and public privacy. You know, so really, I watch it because I have hopes, but, you know, this is what happens when the average age of Congress is 60 years old and, you know, doesn't really understand these issues, doesn't really care about these issues. You know, they're, you know, no one in Congress has a burner phone to because they're worried about this shit. No one in Congress is using Signal to make sure that no one's reading their messages. Like, this is a younger generation problem. You know, I'd say our age and below. So when you have nothing but the baby boomers in there, they don't worry about this shit. So to me, this is all just, this is just noise.
I mean, I think it is largely noise, right? You're gonna have a bunch of, you know, old senators who, you know, maybe they took an hour and a half to watch the Social Dilemma documentary the day before they go in there and question them, and then they're gonna spout off whatever. Well,
they got some young intern in their office yelling at them, like, "Please ask them this, please. Like, this is important." Linda, told me earlier before I got here that you guys are possibly reading their messages. Like, no, not possibly, motherfucker. We read all that shiz.
Yeah, so it is. It's definitely not going to turn into any, like, near term legislation. But I think just the very fact that they get called in front of Senate to do these things, it is important.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I love to make their ass sweat at least once a month. Like, they should have to go through that. You know what I mean? Like, These are billionaire motherfuckers that are playing God with our society. So yeah, bring them in front of Congress, make their assholes tight for 2-3 hours, and I guess send them on their way. Because that's all it seems like we're doing. You know, they're on camera for 3 hours waiting to say something. All we're doing is waiting for a gaffe. That's really all we're doing, is giving them an opportunity to say something that makes them look bad. You know, so as of right now, you know, the CEO Zuckerberg and everybody, they're all just sitting in a room with like 8 lawyers, and they're just drilling them right now, and they're trying to figure out like what's the best way to say this statement we're trying to get across. That's all that's going to happen.
Yeah. Either way, I'll be tuning in on October 28th. As I find these things interesting. So I guess we can just get out of this depressing social engineering topic here. And we got an uplifting one here from SpaceX or Starlink's arm. And they've brought internet to all the emergency responders fighting all the gigantic war wildfires taking place up in Washington State. And from what everybody's been saying, as far as whether it's the the state firefighters or military in support, they set up a bunch of Starlink receivers out in the wilderness and have brought incredibly reliable internet and fast speed internet to the firefighters out in the wildfires, and it's been a big benefit to them. They've talked about
this.
This
isn't just so they could post selfies in front of giant wildfires on Instagram. No, this is greatly beneficial to their response.
Yeah, to increasing their communication, to giving them greater access to imagery and other items that they need to perform their job, and they were able to do it through Starlink. And you know, some of the individuals, like there was a military representative that talked about how they've never seen a easier to set up and reliable system in their lives, as far as just being able to essentially just, you plug it in, it self-locates, it self-actuates and moves itself around to locate the satellite. And then within seconds, it's connecting to a satellite and bringing internet to everybody in the area. So as plug and play as it gets, reliable, and the speeds that they were getting were, you know, broadband quality speeds in the middle of wildfires in Washington State.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to Starlink unveiling. You know, every time they use it a little more, that we get some of these stories of how beneficial it has been to certain industries and certain people. I'm waiting for the initial public rollout. You know, there's no target date. They keep just saying like soon, months. You know, other stories we've released earlier in the year was saying probably end of 2020. We are in the end of 2020 kind of right now, and we still don't have like an exact date. So I'm wondering if that's going to end up getting pushed back to early 2021 or summer 2021. But yeah, this is something that I, you know, being in a major metropolitan area, this isn't something I'd necessarily worry about. I have like 450 megabytes coming into my house from Google or from Comcast broadband. You know, I don't have a lack of data speed in my area.
Well, but he has said that it won't work well. The goal of space or Starlink is not that it's going to serve metropolitan areas, that it won't work well in like Los Angeles and Chicago, because it won't have necessarily the capability for high dense population areas.
Yeah, but that business in Wyoming, this is for you. You know, and I'm an online gamer. I played World of Warcraft. I still play online, you know, generally, and you game with a lot of these people that just have the shittiest connections out in the world. And it's just not something that I understand, because I pay for good connections and I live in a major city. But yeah, if you're in that 5,000 person town in Oklahoma, you're lacking, man. And you're throwing controllers at walls and you're pissed off than a motherfucker. So I'm really happy for a large portion of the rural country to finally be brought to a normal kind of speed internet.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward to Starlink. And whenever it goes public, as SpaceX has talked about it, I'll look at.
Well, you being an RV owner, do you see yourself getting one for the RV so you could when you guys
are? Absolutely. Well, yeah. one day when it comes out, that'll be my off the grid system, and I will disappear from any semblance of society for very long stretches of time. So yeah, I'm looking forward to Starlink internet being something that consumers can buy the receivers themselves and all that other. Right now, that's not the way it is, but eventually that's the plan of the company. So I'm for sure looking forward to bringing high quality internet to me wherever I go. But let's move on to another kind of interesting topic here. We've talked a lot about recently the ransomware affecting various companies, going back to Google, as well as the healthcare system that we talked about, I think last week or 2 weeks ago. And these, the ransoms being paid out for these companies to release the files or release their systems from kind of being held captive by these hackers. And then there was a report that came out that U.S. Treasury is looking to punish companies that are actually paying these ransoms out.
I find this extremely fucked up.
So is it any, I don't really know. Like, if your wife is kidnapped, are you allowed to pay that ransom without penalty, without punishment? I don't really know. I don't know what the rules are around other types of ransom.
I don't think wives are good examples. I think you should use kids because I think there's a large portion of this country that just let that shit ride.
I don't want to go as dark as choosing children here. But yeah, in the end, I will just say dog. Everybody will pay for their dog back. I don't really know what the rules around ransoms are, but I know it's incredibly discouraged to ever pay a ransom because all it does is encourage more events. That turns it from just a regular crime to a successful endeavor, right? For that that hacker. So we see this ransomware becoming more and more prevalent. And with the tools available to hackers and everything else, it becomes more and more possible. And the truth is, the hackers will always have more capability and tools. And I'm not talking about Google. I'm not talking about these major tech companies. But the average,
we just did a story about Garmin getting hacked. Like, Garmin's not some small company.
But yeah, but they're not a major tech company or whatever else. The amount of money that these companies are going to have to invest to protect themselves in real time to every emerging threat from these ransomware companies, like a small company, a mid-grade small company, they're not going to be able to do it.
And that kind of brings me to my point, is that if the government is going to force their reactions to these crimes, then the government has to take some responsibility in protecting from these crimes. But you can't tell me what I can and can't do once the crime happens. You can't handcuff me to my reaction. If you're not going to help protect me in the beginning anyways,
so this is the argument: by punishing people for paying the ransom, that is the government helping protect you from being the next victim.
No, you're helping protect everybody else. You're fucking me.
Right. But you were less likely to be fucked in the first place because everybody else was being punished and you just got the bad draw there. But in the end, this is a step to protect everybody.
So all these mid-grade companies that have data that is worth stealing, they're just the sacrificial lambs for everybody else?
Yes.
See, that's fucked up, man. That's fucked up. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Because I don't give a shit how high you make the punishment and how many people you stop from paying the ransoms. This isn't new. This is going to continue to happen regardless of the reactions.
Hopefully, if the government's going to obligate that people cannot pay the ransoms, then hopefully it's just like the movies when somebody gets kidnapped.
Yeah, Billy Bob Thornton with an earpiece in a fucking office.
The FBI steps in and all that other stuff. And they're there to take over the situation and then remedy it. So they don't want you to pay the ransom because they're going to go and get the guy. Then hopefully that becomes the case, right? That there's a incredibly competent cyber division of the FBI that then steps in when you report it as a company and say that, hey, I've got ransomware. They step in and say, all right, you are not to pay this ransom. It is not going to go well if you pay it. But here's our team of super nerds that are going to identify who did it and free up your system for you, free of charge. This is the government's job. So if, yeah, I agree. If you're going to obligate that they can't pay the ransom, then that needs to be the system that comes in.
I doubt that that's going on right now. You probably got some 58-year-old FBI dude coming in with a fucking name tag and a badge, just going someone stole your data there, huh? you do not have that 26-year-old Asian or Indian dude with the gangsterous laptop coming and setting up shop in some conference room at your office. I promise you that is not happening right now.
Well, I agree that that's where we'd have to get before I think it's fair to say that, like, okay, as a blanket statement, you can't pay that ransom. Because, yeah, some of these companies, like, in order to exist, they might have to pay that ransom. Like, if their critical systems are affected and they don't have the means to defeat it, they might have to pay that ransom.
Well, and that's the thing is we, you know, aside from the Garmin story, we did the story of them hacking into the medical records, you know, so you lock up an entire surgical team. Like, what are you supposed to do? Just let people on dialysis and let people that need surgeries die because we have this overall goal of not incentivizing cybercrime? Like, the fuck?
Yeah, I can't remember. And there was that university that recently was attacked, and the university system was shut down. Our files were held kind of ransomed hostage there. So yeah, no, it's definitely a emerging, like, major crime that is happening. I'm sure somebody today is being affected by it. So
to me, this is the government saying, "Hey, don't do that." And you're like, "Well, what am I supposed to do?" And they just go, "Oh." But I know you can't do that. Well, fuck you then. I'm like, you know, I just don't see this as a solution. I get the mindset, like we said, this has been a mindset in kidnappings and terrorism for a long time. You don't negotiate with terrorists. I don't think it's that easy. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, nothing's that black and white or easy, but I think it's actually the right way to go about it, as far as, you know, de-incentivizing the ransomware hackers from just making
you tell
this
me not to pay you
thing.
Send me Billy Bob Thornton. That's all I know.
All right, and then I guess our final thing here is that we've got Amazon trying out a new biometric payment system that is palm scanning.
Yeah, they're gonna roll this out at two stores now, finally. And we've been hearing about this for a little while. It's gonna roll out now, though.
Yeah, and I so this is where it's completely touchless. You know, this is designed for the COVID world. You just hold your hand above a sensor and it scans your palm and is able to uniquely identify you. You don't have to have an Amazon account or anything even to do this. So they're trying to roll it out to stores everywhere, and it can just link to whatever you want it to link to. It doesn't have to link to Amazon. They would like you to link it to Amazon, I'm sure, but in the end, you could pay with whatever service system you want. And it's purely this palm scanning system. And I love, like, the tech article about this. Like, some of the biggest concerns are the fact that, like, people just are dumb, and and it talks about, like, the amount of hours.
Oh, you know, people gonna touch it.
Like, yeah, people are gonna touch it.
You know, people gonna touch it,
and then the sensor's not gonna work. Like, it's supposed to be touchless, so it doesn't get people's oils and, you know, prints and stuff on it, so that way it can always read clearly and cleanly. So it's completely touchless, and it's like, oh, people are gonna slap their palm on it. People are gonna think that they have to put their hand on this thing, and that's one of the biggest concerns, is how much cleaning and maintenance is gonna be needed to be done while you retrain the public.
But to me, it's like you're worried about the palm scanner, but you touched how many fucking doors on your way to the goddamn store. No,
so the touching isn't about the dirtiness. The touching is about the fact that the sensors require the lenses to be clean. So every time you touch it, you're putting smudges and stuff on it. So it's designed so nobody touches it, so it just stays as a clean camera lens at all times. So, but what they're saying is that we are so ingrained into this movie concept of like palm scanners, to get into the vault or whatever else that we got to put our hand on it, that everybody's just going to come and just jam their hand on there. And then now you got to have some cleaner come up behind it and Windex the hell out of it to make sure it's a clean lens.
You could have a giant sign that says, do not look into eye scanner, and you will have a dozen assholes put their eyeball right on that thing just because every movie told them they should.
Yeah, so that's exactly, that's their one of their major concerns here is just that people suck. They will not read whatever instructions you put on there to say, like, keep your hands 6 inches above the camera. Do not touch the camera. Everybody's still going to fuck it up.
I just find that so everyone's like worried about like the palm scanning and having it attached to your debit card and stuff. Like, what scares me is that like you put all the items in your cart and then you walk out. Like, you just walk out. So that means there are dozens, if not hundreds, of cameras everywhere biometrically tracing you, watching every item you put in your cart. Like there is no way this is possible without like scanning every second of what you're doing in that store.
Yeah, fact. And you know they're gonna have AI, doing all the same stuff that they do on the internet. You know, where they measure how many milliseconds you looked at one photo vice the other to see which ones.
I've talked to store owners about optical recognition that quantifies how long you look at an item, if you read the ingredients or not. Like, I've talked to store owners about this shit and how they're like all excited to get this data, and I'm just like, man, like no,
That would all be coming to those. And those are those specific like Amazon stores that they're testing. But this Amazon Pay extends beyond that. Again, they're trying to have this just be put next to every card reader in whatever store you go to as a viable means towards like revolutionizing payment systems. So it's not tied just to the Amazon store or the, you know, the...
I want to see like an SNL skit where they... You know, so like we take all these things and we imagine them in the like tech world, you know, like in your phone giving you alerts of buying products, or like, you know, at the store, you're just going to get an alert on your phone. Imagine if we didn't have smartphones and there was a real person following you around the store saying, hey, you haven't bought peanut butter in 3 weeks. You might need some peanut butter. Like, would you find that fucking helpful even if you needed peanut butter? Or would you be utterly annoyed and want to punch that fucking dude in the goddamn face? Because essentially, it's the same fucking thing. It's the same fucking thing. So now, instead of a human meat robot following you around a goddamn store, nudging you like, hey, think you might be out of TP. Think you, like, oh yeah, that's right. I do need toilet paper. Thanks, Bob. Like,
it's Samantha's birthday. You want me to send her a message?
You know, like, if it was an actual human, we'd all be fucking beating the shit out of that dude. You know, but because it's tech and because it's in our phone, like, it's all good. Like, no.
I think, what was it? The second Wreck-It Ralph movie? I don't know if you've seen it.
I have.
I think you've seen it. I love the scenes when he's walking through the internet and all the pop-up notifications that pop up. Like, I thought they personified the internet in that child's movie beautifully. Like, I thought it was absolutely great.
They really did. So. Yeah, but like, to me in my head, that's kind of like what it is. Like, you're going to walk into a store and you're going to have a digital douchebag following you around telling you what you probably need and what you should buy and be like, hey, olives are on sale. I don't give a fuck if olives are on sale.
Hey, have you heard of chemtrails?
You know, hey, if you buy one more of those, you get half off. Because, you know, that's all they're going to be doing is encouraging you to buy more shit than you actually needed. Like, Target doesn't just put shit in the air to do that automatically. Now I got a Target assistant telling me all the shit that I need to buy as I walk by. Like, nah, man, I don't see this as a good for society. When used for good, it could be beneficial, but it won't be used for good. It'll be used for evil.
It'll be used to manipulate people.
It'll be used for evil.
All right. Well, that is That is a week in news. Most of it depressing.
Yeah.
This was a this was not a
not too good many opportunities for some good one-liners in this week.
Yeah. this wasn't an uplifting one. But we hope you come back next week to hear the brighter side. Hear how we recover from a down week of news.
And, yeah, as we get closer and closer to the end of this year, I don't know, man. I don't know. shit's getting crazy out there.
Yeah. We still got an election less than a month away. Let's see what happens. But as always, thank you for listening. We appreciate it. We hope you join us again next week. We hope you're enjoying some of the Cantina conversations, maybe picking up a new book as Megan has been dominating the Cantina conversations with some great interviews with authors lately. And, you know, if you've gone and deleted your social media accounts based off of all the information that's out there, I don't blame you one bit. I toy with that idea all the time. But in the meantime, and you want to join in a community that is hopefully not pushing you in the wrong direction, and that's the Nerd Cantina Facebook group. Join us over at thenerdcantina.com/community to have some good discussions and be a part of the group there.
And because of Megan's persistence in doing great interviews with all these authors, we're starting to roll out a book club in the community. We have our first event coming up on the 27th of October. We're going to be reading Bent Heavens by Daniel Krauss. Daniel Krauss has been on the show 3 times this year. Bent Heavens was the first book he was promoting. It kind of follows the Halloween theme. It's very, it's a pretty dark book, but it's a quick read. It's a short read. So that being our first book, I think everybody has plenty of time to read it. And then we're going to do a Zoom meeting where we kind of have a nice discussion over it. So if you're looking for a new book to read and you're looking for a community to share your thoughts on it with, we will be doing our first Nerd Cantina book club event at the end of the month. So pick up a copy of Bent Heavens.
You posted that in the group and it was crickets. A bunch of illiterate ass nerds. Somebody pick up a book and read.
We did a poll and asked how many people would want to do a book club, and it was like 20. You know, and so I'm like, all right, let's read a book, and everyone's like, oh shit, yeah, we got to read that thing. It's a great audiobook if you're not into reading. It's a great audiobook. After the meeting, we do have a few questions that I was able to ask Daniel Krauss about Bent Heavens, where we went really into spoilers, so we didn't want to post it until a decent amount of time went by. So we look at the book club meeting as a good opportunity to have a nice spoiler-filled discussion and then post Daniel Krauss's thoughts on it. So I encourage everyone to pick it up and give it a read.
All right. With all that said, thanks again. We will talk to you next week, nerds.
See ya.